Through dangers untold and hardships unnumbered, I have fought my way here to the castle beyond the Goblin City to make this podcast part of the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbncom.com. You have no power over me.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 27. I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. The Tome is a D&D news and review podcast, and in this episode, we will be practicing our ambush skills with Wolfgang Bauer. Welcome again to episode 27 of The Tome, Wolfgang Bauer. I only have a few little things to talk about. First of all, yes, I know there's a lot of 4th edition stuff out there. I know you guys want to know a lot of information about the new 4th edition D&D that's slated to come out in a little less than a year. And I've been gathering that information. I'm ravaging as many sources as I can. I'm setting up interviews with Wizards of the Coast people. I'm doing all kinds of stuff, and I've gathered over 3 pages of notes just by sorting through the message boards and the blogs and all that kind of stuff. I do have that stuff. I am going to release it. I was really anxious at first to get it out as quickly as possible and get it to you guys so you can use it and have that information. And then I realized, you know what, though? We've got a year. I'm going to take some time. I said to the interviewing folks that I'm going to interview them in a couple of months after some things have died down and after they can talk about a few more things and some playtesting has happened. I don't want to nail everybody right over the head right away with 4th edition stuff in the first month after it was announced and then have nothing to talk about for the next 8 months or 9 months or whatever it is. So the 4th edition stuff is coming. Trust me in that. Other than that, I'm going to get right into today's episode. Like I said, I'm going to now with the new format. I do have the first of the theme or advice episodes in the works, and I'm getting that going. But for now, I have a great interview that I did now almost a month and a half ago with Wolfgang Bauer. So I'm going to jump right into that. And in a few weeks here then, we'll get into another interview that I did over the summer with James Jacobs right after I did the Wolfgang Bauer interview, both of which I originally was hoping to get out before Gen Con. Obviously, that didn't happen, so I'm going to get them out to you as quickly as possible. So here's a quick promo for a podcast that I've really been enjoying lately. So go check these guys out, and then I'll go right from there into the interview with Wolfgang Bauer.
The Gamer Traveler podcast combines gaming and travel all in one. In each episode, we feature a location around the world, learn about its history and travel appeal, and then find ways to use it in your games. We also have sound-seeing tours and interviews with other gamer travelers. Learn more by visiting thegamertraveler.com, where you can see the show notes and post in the forums. The Gamer Traveler podcast, because our world is the best campaign setting. thegamertraveler.com.
Hi, this is Wolfgang Bauer, author of Expedition to the Demon Web Pits and publisher of Kobold Quarterly. You better listen to The Tome, or kobolds are going to come get you.
This is Jeff Greiner, The Tome host, and today I'm talking to Wolfgang Bauer, highly respected game designer in the D20 system. Wolfgang, welcome to The Tome.
Oh, it's good to be here.
The traditional first question I like to ask when I get a hold of game designers and writers and authors here, how did you first get involved in Dungeons & Dragons?
I did it as a player, like everyone else. Mm-hmm. I was playing in junior high school. I was playing throughout high school and into college. And unlike a lot of people, I decided I would write something for it. And I would pitch my great ideas to those folks in Lake Geneva at TSR. I sent them a query, and they wrote back to me and said, send us the article. And at the time, I didn't realize that your first query is usually a miss. So I thought, well, there's nothing unusual about that. It was a great idea. Of course they want it. And they read the article and they printed the article. So it seemed really easy. And it hasn't always been that easy since then. But that was my first professional sale. And it got me completely hooked. The idea that you can send something off and a few months or a year later, there it is in print. So that was pretty cool.
And what article was that?
That was an adventure for Dungeon Magazine called The Glass House. It's a little revenge fantasy piece about a revenant that comes back to avenge his own death. And looking back on it, it's kind of bad. But, it was good enough to be published and accepted, and it was short. And having spent some time in the industry now as an editor, I realized that was probably a major selling point for it, was that I wrote it pretty tight and pretty short. And having the right length sometimes is an important strength for a written piece.
You bet. Well, and like many things in life, the more you work on it, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And you've had quite a bit of experience now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Sold to the magazines for many years. As a freelancer, I hired on then as an editorial assistant at TSR, working on the magazines, and I was there for about 4 or 5 years. And then I worked at WotC for another 3 years as a staffer in their role-playing division, working on things like Dark Matter and the Alternity System.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of time inside the industry, and more recently, I've been a freelancer again. So many years experience with many systems, most of them the TSR or WotC house systems. But I've written for Chaosium and for Iron Crown and for others as well.
Okay. So you've had a lot of experience. You've worked on a lot of different products. You've probably worked with a lot of different people. Has there been anybody that you've worked with that you've been particularly excited about?
Well, yeah. I mean, I got to work initially with people whose names I only knew from the outside of a box set or the credits page on some of the D&D manuals that I was such a fan of, that I'm still a fan of. Zeb Cook was one of the people I got to work with. He was doing Planescape, and there were bull sessions around the office about what to do. I got to participate in some of those as a new employee, and I was thrilled to be able to contribute to those. I later wrote some products in the line. A lot of the editors, I didn't really know many of them that well until I showed up, but people like Roger Moore, former editor of Dragon Magazine, he had a pretty big profile, a pretty big presence in the industry. So getting to meet him and find out what a goofball he is and work with him, he taught me a lot of what I know as an editor. That was a privilege too.
Very cool. And you also worked, I see, on the Forge of War book recently came out.
Oh, yeah, that's much more recent work. Absolutely. I worked with James Wyatt and Ari Marmel on that one. And not my first exposure to Eberron, but I loved the setting. And I was very fortunate to get to write backstory and history for the setting. And since Eberron is all about the war, That's really central to the history and the ambiance of the setting.
So how much interaction did you have with the other authors on that book?
A lot of it was done through a message board online, and some of it was done through phone calls and emails. But it wasn't quite the same as some of the older style where you'd have, people I could shout at down the hall. But we did pass outlines and bits of text back and forth.
So is it a difference between a freelance writer that led to that, and you're not at the office?
Absolutely, right? James Wyatt was the WotC honcho holding down the fort for Wizards of the Coast, and Ari and I, freelancers in different parts of the country on different coasts, we worked with James because he had an outline to start, And then when we made our turnovers, he had commentary and suggestions for revision. So he coordinated and ran the project. It was, you know, his baby, but Ari and I were trying to stay in parallel with what he suggested.
Okay. Has, I guess, Dungeons & Dragons, whether it be TSR or Wizards of the Coast, have they always relied so heavily on freelancers, or is that a fairly new development?
You know, that's sort of cyclical. I think it depends on how the company bean counters are working, right? Sometimes somebody is saying, well, we could save a lot of money on, I don't know, healthcare or something if we just hired freelancers. It would be so much cheaper or easier or better. And then at some point, a freelancer doesn't come through, right? They don't turn anything over, or they turn over mm-hmm. junk. And the people in-house have to scramble to fix it and work ridiculously hard to make sure the product doesn't fall off the schedule. And they say, well, you know, stop giving us freelancers. We'd rather keep the work in-house where we know what we're getting. And it's a pendulum. It swings back and forth, right? Sometimes they say we're better off farming it out when we need it, and sometimes they're better off saying we need to keep the standards high and keep it all in-house and always know what we're going to get.
Sure. And you mentioned that you enjoyed working on Eberron as a setting. It's a newer setting.
Mm-hmm.
But you've worked on some other settings too, and some older settings, and I know specifically like Greyhawk is a very old setting that you've worked on considerably. What's it like, and how does that differ, working on a new setting like Eberron compared to working on an older, established setting?
Well, the beauty of the new setting is, well, A, it's the new hotness, right? Everybody's excited about the new thing because there is a world of possibilities. Not everything is nailed down, and you don't feel like you've got 20 or 30 or 40 supplements to consult before you can start off. I mean, I read some of the novels. I read pretty much everything Eberron had in print, and that didn't take all that long. And then there's also the possibility to make bigger impacts, right? You can talk more about who are the main characters in a new setting. In Greyhawk, that's already predefined for you.
Sure.
So it's creative freedom versus getting to play in somebody's sandbox where they've already spent 20 or 30 years making stuff cool in Greyhawk. There's lots of cool stuff lying around, but you don't need to, or even necessarily get permission to make new cool stuff. If they say, go work with I Use the Evil, great, that's what you work on.
So as far as game books go, do you tend to prefer more fluff or more crunch, or which one do you prefer to write more?
Yeah, you know, I get this question, and I've even asked people this question when I do interviews, and I'm coming around to the point of view that it's a bit of a false choice, right? There are times when I really want the crunch, and I appreciate it as a player or as a DM because it solves problems for me or it does something cool for the game. And there are times when I need inspiration and I want somebody to give me flavorful stuff that's going to, you know, kick off my next campaign or improve the one I've got. And mechanics won't do that. Fluff probably will get me inspired. So I want them both for different reasons. But if I had to choose, and if I have to say I prefer writing one or the other, I'd probably say, give me the fluff. I know there are designers who are better at mechanics than I am, and the stuff I prefer to write is adventures, where flavor and story and fluff matter a lot more. And
sure.
mechanics will never save an adventure, you know, if the
right.
fluff is bad. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, that's a good perception. I mean, it seems if you've got the fluff, then the mechanics can just be there to sort of support what, you know, that
yeah, but the mechanics are crucial, right? I mean, if the mechanics
in a lot of ways they are.
If they're bad, they're the foundation. If you build on a bad foundation, you're stuck.
Exactly.
So I appreciate the fact that third edition mechanics are solid, and there's been a lot of good expansion in a number of directions. But But given a choice of working on something that was pure crunch or pure fluff, I'd probably say pure fluff. That's the section I tend to get assigned to. When WotC asks me to do something, they tend to say, well, do an adventure, pretty fluff heavy. Or like in the Eberron project, I worked mostly on sections describing the armies and sections describing the history. So not mechanically heavy.
You bet. Very cool. Now, you've also, in recent years, developed a unique way of doing independent work as a D&D writer. Could you tell us a little bit about the open design projects?
Yeah, absolutely. I started off with open design back in March of 2006 when I was completely sleep deprived. My daughter had just been born. I wasn't really on any regular sleep cycle. And I said to myself, yeah, wouldn't it be cool if I just launched this new format? And I asked people to say, support this work, fork over a few bucks, and you will get to, you know, tell a designer what to do. That was the original idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the critique, well, people showed up with, you know, money in hand and said, yeah, sure, I'd love to tell you what to write. Here's my money, and you know, here's my list of bullet points of what I'd like you to do. So the weakness of this approach quickly became apparent. It's the more people you have, the more input there is, and it can, of course, turn into a mess. But the solution to that was actually that I said from the beginning, I'm going to do all the writing for this. I don't want people to pay me money so they can wind up doing some of the writing. That's weird, for one thing, paying somebody to write. And for another thing, it means that, you know, we'll never have a single voice, and it'll be impossible to edit, and it'll just turn into a mess. So everybody gets to give me advice and tell me what to do and make suggestions. But when it comes right down to it, at the keyboard, I have to do all the typing. And that's good, because it means that everybody's got input on this project, and everybody has a voice, but it never turns into design by committee, and that's what I was terrified was going to happen.
Sure.
Right?
So how long does it take to go from an open design project from beginning to end?
They varied. The first one was written and printed in about 3 months. And it actually took almost as long to, like, raise the funds to do it and pay the mappers and the artists and me as it did to write it and produce it. The current open design project is huge. It's, like, over 100 pages. It's called The Empire of the Ghouls, and it's a massive Underdark exploration with, you know, society sections and new magic and 10 new monsters and all this stuff. And that has been going since February. It's July now. It won't be done until October. So that's more like 8 months.
Sure.
So it sounds
like an ambitious project, though.
It's very ambitious, and that was sort of the way I pitched it to people. The trend is that the supporters and the patrons of the work keep saying, well, make it bigger, make it longer, give me more for my money, right? Because that's it's totally understandable. Every gamer wants a bigger, better supplement. Of course, that means, in some sense, there have to be more patrons of the work, or every patron needs to fork over more bucks, right?
Sure.
So there's something like 150 supporters of the current project, and there were only like 50 of the first one.
Okay.
So it's a community. It's a small group of people. It's, you know, it's a conversation I have with them every day, posting parts of the design, asking questions, what would the patrons think is better, and it's just constant feedback every day.
Okay. So do you start off with just a general concept that you pitch, and then it sort of develops and changes from there, or do you just go to the patrons and say, what kind of supplement do you want me to write from the very start?
Well, there's been a little of a mix. The generally I offer people like six or eight choices and say, okay, you know, which of these do you like? And the one that attracts the most support wins. But some of those six or eight choices are ones that I came up with. And they're usually like one-line concepts, like, you know, an Underdark kingdom full of ghouls or a flying castle adventure. Some of those concepts come from the patrons, right? So it's not just my ideas being thrown out at the first level and they're picking one. I think one of the patron-suggested projects almost took the second open design slot. So, yeah, it's really pretty wide open. If everybody likes your idea, it has a good chance of becoming one of these projects. I can only do about two a year, though.
Sure. And then you're also working on another new project these days called Kobold Quarterly.
Yeah, we just launched the first issue. It went out the 12th of July, and we've got subscribers all over the world. It's a PDF magazine and a paper magazine. And it's basically a little journal full of fantasy game material for your D&D game, your D20 game, and some of it's not system specific. So the first issue is about 32 pages, and it's gotten great reviews from folks so far. People have been writing me very kind letters. They like the content. They like the fact that somebody is putting together a magazine now that Dragon and Dungeon are going away.
Mm-hmm.
And for the future, it looks bright there because I have gotten queries from some amazing freelancers who want to write for it and are on schedule to have a couple of those in issue number two. So
very
I'm really
cool.
I'm super excited that, you know, Ed Greenwood and Keith Baker and Ari Marmel are all pitching material that may be in a future issue.
Well, and personally, I'm a big Forgotten Realms fan, so anything that has Ed Greenwood's name on it, I'll end up buying.
Yeah, I mean, he does.
That's exciting.
Yeah, he does a lot of fantastic stuff. Of course, yeah. I mean, the downside of launching a magazine without the seal of approval from WotC is I can't use their settings.
Sure.
Right? So I can ask Ed Greenwood to write something, and it will feel a little like the Realms because it's Ed writing it.
Right.
But unfortunately, I can't ask him to write the Waterdeep article. So
you bet.
That's kind of
sad. Well, it's neat though that he's looking to write for you when he hasn't even appeared on the pages of Dragon in a long time, other than, you know, brief introductions to some Forgotten Realms articles.
Well, you know, I've worked with him for a long time. This is the advantage of having worked for TSR, you know, 12 years ago. There, you make some connections then. I was a junior editor on some of Ed's pieces when he was writing The Wizards 3 for Dragon Magazine back then. And we've kept up. I see him at conventions. I saw him a couple months ago at a wedding, actually. So, you know, he's around, and I think he likes to stay out there in places people don't expect to see him.
That's very cool. Now, you mentioned that that Dragon and Dungeon Magazine are being pulled into a digital sort of format.
Yep.
Did that announcement have anything to do with your decision to put out Kobold Quarterly?
Yeah, I mean, I'd been thinking, wouldn't it be great to do a magazine ever since I started Open Design? But I always said, well, you know, the guys at Paizo are doing such a good job. Why should I do all that work to go up against them and get squished? It just seemed redundant. So when the announcement came, I thought about it some more. I said, well, it wasn't clear at that point that WotC was going to necessarily do anything with the properties, right? At first, people were like, they're just pulling the licenses. We're not sure what they're doing with them. Now it's clear that they're going to do something online, although it's still not clear exactly what.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, yeah, you know, it's a quarterly magazine. if it does some of what Dragon and Dungeon did, it would still be better than nothing. And it has turned out pretty darn well for the first issue. I'm hoping in future installments to be able to print in color instead of just have the PDF in color. I'm hoping to have a wider range of authors. You know, it's the sort of thing you grow slowly over time. And I'm not going to worry too much about what WotC's doing online. I'm sure what they're doing is going to be interesting, and they have a ton of resources to throw at it. But I'm sort of running a little one-man show that's meant to be fun and meant to be very useful. And it doesn't necessarily serve any particular marketing needs that Hasbro has, right? It's, it's not a marketing piece. It's just for fun.
Well, and you seem to be a go-to author for Dragon and Dungeon for a long time. But it sounds like you're not going to be involved with Dungeon and Dragon as it goes to the digital format then?
I don't know. I've been mulling that over, and there are certain things I would consider putting in the hopper for them. And I've done some things with the Wizards website. I did one on how to design adventures. I did a piece on villains. I did an Eberron series, which wasn't really supposed to be an Eberron series, but anyway. it was supposed to be a generic series. I'm not against the idea of this digital distribution of content. It might be very cool, but I just don't really know enough about it to say one way or the other right now. They haven't really announced an editor-in-chief. The format's unclear. I'll probably wait and see. I've got so much work to do for Kobold Quarterly, so much to do for Paizo's Pathfinder, that I'm pretty booked.
Oh, you're working on Pathfinder, too.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool.
Installment number 4 is called Fortress of the Stone Giants, and I turned it over to my editor a couple weeks back. The playtesters liked it, which I think is always a good sign. And I wrote, I have favorites among my own monsters. I write a lot of them, but the one in Pathfinder is one of my favorites that I've written in the last couple of years. So I think it'll go over. I think people will like
it. Very cool. Well, I even have an interview lined up here pretty soon with James Jacobs.
Oh, he's
Pathfinder.
Awesome. Yeah, he's doing that. The first installment is his, and of course he's editing the series, and he's
a small world.
Yeah, small world, and he's doing great work for Pathfinder, and I'll be curious to see how it develops over time.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see Pathfinder as sort of a, it almost seems experimental in its design, you know, to see how it turns out as far as a subscription service for game books, which, you know, obviously runs more expensive than a magazine, which is a proven model.
Sure.
Subscription. So,
I think it's going to be great because I've seen nothing but good stuff from Paizo in the past, and it's the same crew involved. Certainly, I worked pretty darn hard on my installment, and I asked the playtesters a lot of sharp questions about, you know, how can we make this thing as great as it can be? Because without Dungeon and Dragon around, of course, Paizo needs this to be a success.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everybody is pulling out all the stops, their writers, their artists. I mean, they've got Wayne Reynolds doing all of this illustration for the series, and his art is great. I saw some of his sketches recently. And
so we talked about Open Design and Kobold Quarterly, some of these independent things that you're working on. What would you consider to be a success for a project like that? And do you think that you're seeing success in them?
I think I am seeing success because the second one of the Open Design projects was called Castle Shadowcrag, and it was recently nominated for an Ennie Award as the best electronic book. So that was a nomination that was a very pleasant surprise, and you know, I have no idea whether a sort of private commission project like that which only has 100 patrons, has a chance of winning in a big public vote, but the fact that the judges thought it was worthy, that's a very pleasant nod. I'm in good company there with the other nominees. We'll see how that turns out. And partly it's a success, I think, because every time I've done one of these open design projects, more people show up than showed up last time. It's growing slowly, but it's growing.
I suppose if you keep it growing, then that's successful.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm enjoying it from a creative standpoint. The first one was a financial disaster, but creatively, I had a great time. So I said, let's do another one. Let's give it another shot. And the give and take and just having this group of really sharp gamers, artists, mappers, all participating really keeps me on my toes. And every day I'm trying to put my best foot forward with them. And if you do that day after day, the end result tends to be a little better than something that just stutters along. So creatively, it's been a big success. And I think I'll keep doing that at least once or twice a year for that reason.
That's cool.
Yeah. The magazine, it's harder to say, right? It's just launched. The reviews are great. I get lots of nice letters. But will the sales be around to keep it going? Print magazines is a tough business.
Yeah, it is.
So maybe. I don't know.
Personally, I'd love to see a day when it goes into a full print format.
Well, it is in print now.
Delivered in my mailbox in full color, like, you know.
Oh, well, all right. It's delivered in your mailbox, but it's not in full color yet.
Right.
I just can't afford it. Man, did I want it to be full color. I really did.
Oh, I know.
I did all the layout for the PDF in color thinking, if only the numbers would add up. It's like I don't have enough subscribers to be able to do it. But, you know, the minute I do, and maybe even a little before I can really swing it, I'm going to color with that thing if at all possible. Because I've got the artists. It would look better in color. But
and the PDF I have looks wonderful.
Well, thanks.
So I look forward to the day that it grows and becomes successful enough that kind of high-quality color can be delivered in paper to my hand. So
I'm looking forward to that day, too.
Good. And since both the magazine and the open design projects that you've been doing are released in a digital format, do you ever worry about people distributing it, without paying for it?
Sure. I expect that at some point we'll see some of those things appear on a pirate site or on the BitTorrent or wherever. I guess I can't worry too much about that. I'm unwilling to lock my patrons out of the products with some kind of garbage DRM thing, right? Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to use it any way they want. And if one of them decides, hey, let's put it out there, I guess the silver lining might be more people find out about open design and show up for the next one. Every one of these products so far has included a note saying, hey, if you got a copy of this that you didn't pay for, here's where open design comes from, and it'd be good for your internet karma if you sent $10 our way.
Sure.
It's basically the shareware model, but as a PDF publisher, I don't think you can worry about that too much. You have to assume most of your customers are honest, and you want to reach an audience. So if it gets out there, them's the breaks. If it happens too often, I fold up shop.
Sure. I think that's a good approach because you put a lot of those DRM and the protections and that kind of stuff on it, and it almost becomes such a pain for the customer that
A watermark is fine, and anything beyond that is a pain in the neck.
Sure.
And I just, I trust the people I'm selling to do the right thing, and so far they have. And I don't think that'll change. I hope that won't change. But But even if it winds up somewhere out there, I'm just going to keep making new stuff.
That's a cool approach to it. Well, I'm getting down to my last series of questions here.
Hit me with them.
Okay. My next question here is, what is a piece of work that you've done that you are especially proud of? If there was one thing that people could pick up that would say, this is what Wolfgang Bauer has to offer, what would you suggest they go out and get?
I've usually got two or three answers to that, and the first one is always, well, the thing I'm working on now is the coolest. But since it's not in print yet, I guess I won't say Empire of the Ghouls. Looking back a little further, there's a couple that I'm very proud of right now. One is Castle Shadowcrag, the second open design project, just because, hey, it's my first any nomination as an independent publisher, right? All of the previous ones were all with WotC or Paizo. And going back much further, 10 years ago, I'm still really happy with the Dark Matter campaign setting that I wrote with Monty Cook. And we had a lot of fun writing it. It's all the conspiracy stuff that became, you know, hugely popular about a year and a half, 2 years after it shipped. Mm-hmm. And it's still a fun read. It came back in a D20 modern edition just recently. They re-released it, and that's always a sign that people like the work. I think the audience it found was always pretty small, but I'm still proud of that one.
I remember playing a session or two of it back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as big a genre as fantasy, but it can still be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And other than what you've already mentioned, do you have any upcoming projects that we can look forward to?
There are. Beyond those projects, there's Kobold Quarterly number 2 coming out in October. There's also some work I'm doing for Paizo's Game Mastery line, but I don't think I can reveal the title yet.
Okay.
But they're doing those standalone modules, and I'll be doing one of those with a bit of a Cthulhu twist. That is going to be, I think it's out in January. And I'm also doing something with EN World. They've got the Burning Sky campaign saga, and I'm doing one of the final installments for that. It's a tiny little piece. I'm writing 10,000 words. It's not one of their bigger installments, but it's get in, blow everything up, get out, and it's been a lot of fun. So
very
that's
cool.
Coming too. That one's called Sleep Ye Cursed Child, which sounds all Shakespearean, but really it's old school sword and sorcery.
Very cool. And any chance we're going to see any more Arabian Al-Qadim style? I noticed that you worked a lot on Al-Qadim, and you sort of brought it back for Dragon several times. And
yeah, you know, I've been thinking about that lately. I just got a letter, an email to the editor of Kobold Quarterly saying, hey, when do we get our Al-Qadim fix from you? And I thought about it, and it might not be a bad idea. I don't know if it's, I'm not sure how people would react to it. On the one hand, I'd really like to do Assassins and Genies and the whole 1001 Nights in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I did a slew of Arabian Monsters in Dragon Magazine about a year ago, but that's the last time I touched anything like it. So maybe somebody will pitch me a query for it and I will publish an article on it. But right now, WotC isn't doing anything with the Al-Qadim rights.
Right.
So it won't be official, but it would be fun to just do desert-flavored fantasy.
Sure. I'd love to see an Arabian-style D20 setting sort of come back. It hasn't really, D&D in the Arabian style hasn't really existed since Al-Qadim.
I think everyone's kind of afraid to touch Arabian myth and legend right now because, Middle East politics and whatnot. But sure. I think maybe there's a way to make that work for you. I wish there were, you know, some, I don't know, GI or Marine or somebody who's like living in the desert and knows what it's like, who wrote some cool article and said, hey, I'm a gamer and I know this culture and here's something cool about it. But
you bet.
I don't know if that'll happen. Maybe you need to pitch one.
Maybe. I'll think on that. Although I do know in a recent interview that I did, I think it was with Ari Marmaligan, I think one of the things he said that he wished he could get more into was an Al-Kadim or an Arabian-style gaming.
Excellent. Well,
so.
I'm going to go hit up Ari then, because...
I think it was him. I'd have to listen to the interview again.
Like the caffeine-powered robot of the field at the moment. He's just everywhere, so I'm sure he could rattle something together, and it would rock.
Yeah. I've recently talked to him and Eitan Bernstein, so I know it was one of those two.
Okay.
For some reason, I want to say it was Ari that said he was interested in something like that. So.
Well, that mythology is just a gold mine of great material. It's fun to play.
Yeah.
All that sort of Thief of Baghdad, old Hollywood-style stuff is burned into our brains. Ray Harryhausen's monster movies are basically one big gold mine to rip off monsters from.
Sure.
It's a lot of fun, so I hope somebody does something with it. And if nobody else will, I will hit the keyboard.
All right. I'll hold you that.
All right.
Any other projects that you would like to work on that you don't necessarily have in the works now, or but you think would be interesting to do that nobody else is doing?
In a very different sort of pulp vein, I think there's things that Eberron does well, you know, that sort of, I don't know, halflings on dinosaurs, necrotic engines, super killer death rays put together by necromancers, that over-the-top pulp stuff I'd like to see more of. I'm always a sucker for creepy Cthulhu stuff. I play in a regular Cthulhu game every month, so I wish Chaosium were printing more, but at least the stuff that comes out is very strong. And, you know, I'd like to see somebody do another great steampunk adventure, but I haven't seen one in a while.
There hasn't been a lot of steampunk in the role-playing genre for a while.
Yeah, there's Iron Kingdoms, which is sort of in that direction. But yeah, there's not a lot of it. It's a niche market, I realize, but I would put my money down for it.
So you mentioned that you've been playing Cthulhu-type games a lot lately.
Oh, man, I started playing Cthulhu when I signed up at TSR, and it was insane. I had some game masters who were just... They were all trying to top each other, right? Here you are at the TSR design staff, and... On our nights off, we would go role-playing in, like, the local astronomical observatory because somebody knew somebody, and the entire premise of the scenario would be, well, your characters who are astronomers who've seen something you're not supposed to see. And we had a great time, and that parts of that same group have continued playing for 10 years. So.
Wow.
Yeah. I love
so
that.
So what other... What other games do you continue playing, or are you running any games?
I'm running a D&D campaign, which is based in the open design house setting, I guess you could call it, which is the Free City of Zobek campaign. It's a pretty straightforward swords and sorcery campaign with some steampunk elements. I've been playing in mostly D&D one-shots, as a player, and you know the usual run of board games, one-offs. Hey, let's try this thing. But yeah, it's mostly a steady diet of D&D and Cthulhu.
Very cool. So, if people want to find you and shake your hand, are you going to be at any cons this year?
Oh, I wish. I was hoping to be at Gen Con this year, but the timing didn't work out. I will be at Gen Con next year, but that's a ways off.
sure.
So I am unfortunately not in the con scene this year. 2008, I'm already planning on several con appearances. I will show up. I will bring copies of Cobalt Quarterly. I will sit on panels. I'll be happy to talk to folks, but not this year.
You anticipate that if you make it to ConVen next year, that you'll be in the role of, a professional role where you're trying to sell things and market the
I don't know.
Things you're doing, or?
It would be a little odd if I didn't at least try it once. I've never been in the publisher role at a con, right? I've always been just a panelist and a speaker and running demos and those sorts of things, the usual things that designers do. It might be fun to get a booth and sit down and just talk to the public when it's not on a panel or on a topic, but just say, you know, here's what open design is, here's some of the magazines we do, talk to me. I don't know how far that'll go, right? The problem is I live on the West Coast. A lot of the conventions are out east. Travel is tough, especially if you're lugging a lot of paper products with you. So I'll probably just do one, and it'll probably be Gen Con, and everything else is a bonus. I'd love to do Origins or DundraCon or any of the smaller shows, but I don't know that it'll happen.
Well, very cool, and hopefully you make it out to at least Gen Con, if not more, next year, and people can get around and see you. It sounds like for the time being, if they want to hear from you, that they've got to either tune into this interview or find you in the pages of whatever book or magazine you're working on at the time.
Sure, they can find me at wolfgangbauer.com. I'm haunting various online message boards as well. You'll see me on the Paizo boards or the EN World boards. But yeah, I've been mostly in a cave writing for the past year because launching something like Open Design just takes a lot of focused effort.
Sure. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Time.
It's been my pleasure.
Well, all right. That was a really fun interview. And honestly, before this summer, I had never really interviewed anybody before. I gotten some advice on it by listening to some other podcasts about podcasting and different things like that. And I think I really sort of started to hit my stride about this interview. I've had some really good feedback on the interviews previous to this with Ari Marmel and with Eitan Bernstein, and even back to the interview with J.C. Hutchins. And those were really cool, and those guys were really awesome to do that with me. I don't know if Wolfgang Bauer was just an extra cool guy, or if I'm starting to develop some skills as an interviewer, or what the situation was, but that interview was really a lot of fun to do. In any case, that is Wolfgang Bauer. And look forward to another series of interviews coming up as soon as I have time to get them out to you. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way that you can. One of the best ways is to participate. Send your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com, or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also instant message me, join the Tome Yahoo group, leave an audio, or call the Tome hotline at 206-888-6126. That's 206-888-6126. I need to figure out what that spells to make it easier. Somebody figure out what that spells and email it to me. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate that. Most of these can be found at the website at www.thetomeshow.com. I also continue to encourage people to head over to our partner podcast, Fistful of Comics and Games, and Gamers Haven at www.fistfulofcomics.com and at www.canadiancrusaders.com, respectively. This has been episode 27, Wolfgang Bauer of
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
Hi, this is Wolfgang Bauer, author of Forge of War, Expedition to the Demon Web Pits, and a whole lot of independent games you probably don't know. If you don't listen to The Tome, you're a sad, sorry man.